You're listening to Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland on bbsradio.com. We're the number one worldwide internet talk radio network on the planet. I'm going to give you some phone numbers in a minute, so grab a pencil and a piece of paper for call-in purposes. We invite you to call in anytime and often as we share the next hour. This evening, my guest this evening is Joe Nichols. That's J-O-E-N-I-C-O-L-S. Joe has written a wonderful book, How to Make a Good Living as a Professional Psychic. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you for having me this evening.
It's going to be fun. We're looking forward to phone calls. Let me give you those phone numbers now. If you're in the U.S., it's 1-877-270-8714. In Canada, 1-888-284-3274. Joe, do you have a website?
Yes, it's it's joenichols.com. It's J-O-E-N-I-C-O-L-S, no H. So joenichols.com.
Just in case those folks that are listening might want to go on your website while we're on the air. If some folks have the capacity to be with BBS and do that at the same time, all those fancy tech people that I don't know anything about.
Yeah, I know how you feel.
I'm definitely technology challenged these days. How to make a good living as a professional psychic. You wrote this book back in 99, but when I'm reading it, it is just as fresh today as it was when you wrote it, 8 years ago now? That is even remotely interested in being a professional psychic, meaning that we can earn a living by doing what we do, needs this book.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Why did you
write it? I was just going to say, it's also, I wrote it for mainly from my perspective as a professional psychic, and I've been doing psychic readings for over 40 years and full-time professionally for 20, and I wanted to write a book that was kind of a compilation of my own experiences to give people some practical guidance about how to do the business end of it. So, I do CDs and stuff about how to be psychic, but this book is more how to handle the business end of it. You know, how to get started, how to do advertising, how to deal with clients, how to charge, where to work, you know, things like that.
And you have a great office. I've been to your office. I love your office. It feels very
thank you.
Yeah. The cover on this book, where was that picture taken? Japan?
No, actually, it was pretty close, though. It was Zilker Gardens in Austin, Texas. And it's a Japanese, I took the picture, but it's a Japanese wooden bridge, a little, you know, arch bridge over. And if you'll notice, I kind of got the idea. I've got the left half is black and white, and the right half is in real rich color. Kind of got it, you know, like the, when the Wizard of Oz, you know, when Dorothy steps into the Oz, and that's kind of my motivation for the color change.
It's a great picture. Folks, it looks like you can just walk into the picture into a beautiful sense of peace, which is when we work as psychics, we are bringing peace, in my opinion, to our client, hopefully helping them in some way, but we have to get to that point where we can open the door to do it. And that's beyond getting the confidence that you need in your ability. This book takes you right from that step. Now you're convinced, I know what I'm doing. I've read for family and friends now for a while, and woohoo, I might be even actually able to pay the electric bill with doing this. I was interested in your talk about taking that leap for yourself.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I have to say, I can't be a hypocrite. I've got to tell people, you know, I did this stuff in the closet for 20 years, as they say, and didn't even take money for about 17 years for all the wrong reasons. And I finally decided I've got to feed my family, and this is a great way to do it instead of having three day jobs and, starving the family. So I finally said, no, I think I've got to do this. And I kind of started from scratch and didn't know exactly what I was doing. But, and again, the book tries to take a practical approach to, you know, how to get started, what to do, what steps to take, you know, how to do your business card, how to deal with, you know, things like going to psychic fairs, dealing with media, and all these things I kind of had to pick my way through. And I know you've done all these things, too, because I've known you for more than a couple decades. And, you know, we both kind of came up at around the same time in some ways. And, you know, we kind of had to fake it as we went along because there weren't a lot of things in the market at that time.
No, in fact, a lot of us, when we started, it's amazing to me. I've been doing this work since I was 17 and for the public since I was 17, and I'm in my 60s now. And when I was in, came back to Austin in my, oh gosh, mid-20s, early 30s, I looked around and there was a handful of us doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
And when Central Texas Parapsychology Association with Colonel Jackson came along, it was what Texas Parapsychology Association. You were instrumental in founding the Central Texas Parapsychology Association, which was a non-profit organization dedicated to
right.
fostering understanding of psychic phenomena. That's a quote from his flyer. We had Texas Parapsychology already set up to try to educate the public, and there were probably six actual practicing psychics in that group. And then there were the folks around town that in Texas we have, and I'm sure probably in other states too, we have what are called comenderos, which is a combination of very, very, very religious slash witch doctor kind of homeopathic. I'm not saying the right words. I mean to be respectful to their talents, and I don't know how else to describe them, but they're a nice mix, mostly from the Mexican-American community. We had those folks, and we had a few people that would sit on their front porch and do readings, and that was pretty much about it. And now you look around, and it's wonderful to see the blossoming and the serious take that these people have on even scientific base on the work
mm-hmm.
that they do. So it's amazing to me. It's amazing.
Well, there's a study that people can find online. From the Baylor Institute for Studies of Religion from Baylor University, and it's called. It came out in September of 2006, and it's called American. It's a study called American Piety in the 21st Century: New Insights to the Depth and Complexity of Religion in the U.S. And in there, and I was quite excited to see some of the statistics they came up with. They found in their studies of people in the U.S. and they divided it. East, Midwest, South, and West, but a total of, they found that of the people in the U.S., 12.8% of people in the U.S. Believe, you know, in astrologers, palm readers, tarot card readers, fortune tellers, psychics, and that they can foresee the future. So 12.8%, almost 13%, and out of 300 million people, that's, you know, that's 34, 35 million people. And they found that, you know, 12.8 believe in it, but actually, I'm just looking at my study here, 12.5% say that they've actually been to a psychic or a medium. So, you know, there's a pretty, you know, some people want to think that what we do is kind of a fringe, you know, fanatic kind of thing, but there's about 35 million people out here in our country that are, you know, really into this.
And in your book, somewhere in your book, I don't remember where right now, you say that you believe that all of us are born with some level of psychic ability, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's just that I believe not all of us are supposed to do it full time like you do. You have a pretty packed
mm-hmm.
schedule on out into the future. And others, yet others use it every day, and they don't realize that they're using it. That's knowing who's on the phone when it rings and, you know, some of the more what others would consider simple but I think are just as important messages that we get from the universe. I wish more people would pay attention to
that. I think that's the key because a lot of the stuff, and I think both of us experienced this in our past, you know, a lot of psychic phenomenon is, a lot of psychic phenomena are, you know, subtle. You know, there's subtle things that come into our heads. And like if people are driving down the expressway, you know, going home, and they have the monkey chatter, you know, the mind chatter in the head, and they start having all these thoughts firing off, a lot of those are psychic impressions. And a lot of people just discount those, and they say, "Nah, you know, that's not anything." Or, but in fact, it's something important. And people have asked me, "Well, you know, why don't I see more stuff?" You know, they, or even I've had clients, and I'm sure you have too, that say, well, I dreamed about, you know, Aunt Sophie dying or something like that. Why do these things happen to me? And, you know, what I get from my spirit guides is that it's that person's spirit guide trying to get in touch with them so that they'll start using their ability. And my impression is that, you know, if you have a flash, an intuitive flash, that you're going to find a $20 bill on the sidewalk, and, you know, the next day you go and you find a $20 bill, you may just forget about it. You may just forget that you saw that. But, you know, sometimes I think the guys upstairs, the folks upstairs, tend to give us something more dramatic because it gets our attention. And I really think that we can even ask, we can pray and we can ask for guidance about how to receive things that we can use practically and not just get the disasters.
I love the practical approach you take to psychic ability.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm very pragmatic. I believe it's, and I feel that way, but, you know, I have sections in my book about, you know, taking money for psychic work, and to me, it's another talent. Some people may, for whatever reasons, religion or personal preference or some other, you know, who knows, past life reason, they may feel like making a living as being a psychic or being a psychic is not okay, but for me, it's like a gift that, just like throwing a football 70 yards on Sunday afternoon, you know. And I tell my clients that I don't charge for my gift, I charge for my time. And I charge people the same. If I, you know, if somebody's broke and I, you know, they pay me when they can, and I help them get through the next week or make a big decision, or whether they make $1 million based on something I've said, I charge the same amount. So, you know, I do see it as a practical tool, a practical help. And I don't think there's any problem as long as we do it lovingly and for the other person's highest good. There's no reason why we can't use it to help ourselves.
You know, that's what you just said is profound. Doing it for our client's higher good. That's people enter into our lives giving us permission to dig around in theirs. There's a lot of trust that goes on there. And like you said in your book, you didn't go out and solicit clients. Clients came to you. And that word of mouth, that trust of reputation, trust of accuracy, which is another thing you talk about in the book, that there's probably nobody that's 100% accurate, but there are some that are pretty close. And if you're 50% accurate, that's good. So your client walks out and they use some of the information that you shared with them. Hopefully, it is going to be for their higher good. I don't think I've ever met a psychic, I haven't, maybe you have, that intentionally wants to hurt someone or scare the wits out of somebody.
Well, yes, I have heard of that, actually, unfortunately. And that's why it's always good to go word of mouth. You know, that's what I give my client. When somebody calls and says, I live in another city, I want to go to someone in person, how do I do that? I always encourage them to look around at, you know, local shops, you know, the health food stores or New Age practitioners, and get some word-of-mouth referrals. Because I do think there are people, I mean, people can be, maybe I'm cynical, but I think people can be psychic but not necessarily spiritual. So, you know, you do have to be careful. I mean, there are people that can abuse, and I mean, I know of some examples, some not so terrible and others pretty egregious, that, you know, people have abused it, and I think that's been going on for thousands of years, actually. So, yeah, I think people still do need to be careful. You know, word of mouth is why I think it's always good.
Go back to what you just said about being psychic and not necessarily spiritual. How do you separate the two? To you, how are they different? Or are they different?
I think first of all, in my opinion, and I'm not talking about anyone's spirituality here, but this is just kind of a bold-faced example. My opinion is that any successful real estate developer or broker, sports coach, professional gambler, anybody who does that sort of stuff where it requires intuitive spot decisions, you know, at the moment decisions, and their career rises and falls on whether they do it, or, you know, stockbrokers, you know, people, you know, investors, they're all professional psychics, in my opinion. Now, somebody may or may not be religious. And I think people can be religious but not be really spiritual. They can just go to church, for example, but not really live it or believe it. Or people can just sit on a hillside and be spiritual but not necessarily go to church. So to me, it's a sense of God or the oneness or whatever we call the creator, and a sense of that being somehow present in our lives and that that is a good thing, and that we need to, you know, try to increase that for ourselves or help other people experience that too.
Have you ever seen yourself in a past life, a person of the cloth? That's how I see you. I have to admit to the public that Joe and I have known each other for, 30 years?
Probably, or at least 25 or at least, I'm sure, but maybe 30, yeah.
So Joe contacted me when he was creating Central Texas Parapsychology, and that's how we met, and we've worked off and on for fairs and organizations and that sort of thing since then. And one of the first times I ever saw you, because I talked to you 3 or 4 times before I actually met you, I thought, oh, my God, I saw cloaks all around you, not a collar, but cloaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a monk in another lifetime, yeah.
Yeah, and even when I hear your voice, sometimes I think of not necessarily a big congregation of people you preaching to, but more hillsides of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you come across with.
Well, thank you. Well, I think that's a compliment. I appreciate that. Thank you. Well, that's kind of how I see it. I mean, you know, it's like because some of us and some of the listeners may experience this too. If you have an awareness that, you know, of a greater, you know, purpose, I mean, some of us can talk to people on the other side and we know that there's an afterlife and, you know, that there's God and there are angels and it's not anything we question. I mean, certainly I think you and I feel that way. But you know, other people have that feeling, and so you know, we sort of do what's in front of us. You know, sometimes we're supposed to be, you know, on the radio or in the pulpit of a huge church, but sometimes we just are here just sort of like counselors, you know, to help individuals or small groups or do teaching, do classes. And again, I think it's just about what your dharma or your path is supposed to be.
I know you're a teacher, and the list of what you teach is long, and is probably you've probably added to it since this last flyer. But who taught you? Who did you learn from? How did you learn? Why did you decide? I forgot to tell people a while ago that you're a psychic, but you're a palmist, and you're a card reader, not a tarot reader, but what we call a straight deck or a playing deck of cards. Who taught you? What did you reach out first for?
When I was in college, and I started when I was about 17 also, and I'm close to 60 now. My little anecdote here is, I was in the college dorm, you know, writing papers with the guy, and this guy popped in the door with a book of palmistry, and we played around with it and joked around, and I looked at it and I thought, that's pretty interesting. And the guy took the book and we went back to writing and joking around. And I realized the next morning when I woke up that I could remember everything I saw in the book the night before. And it kind of got my attention because I really didn't have photographic memory or anything, or total recall. So I went and checked the book out. I was familiar with the library, so I went back and found the book that he had turned in. And I started reading it, and it's like it was already there. It was already in there. You know, it already stuck. It's like I'd heard it all before. And then I started playing around with it. I started hanging out with psychics, I was here in Austin then, but got experience and had a few readings and said, hey, that looks pretty interesting. I kind of like that. And started dabbling with palmistry. I also, like you, you know, I kind of started with Tarot, but I think I've had a couple of pretty unsavory past lives in medieval Europe. So when I, back in those days, 40 years ago, I mean, there weren't very many Tarot decks like there are now. And some of the older ones, the Weight deck, the Rider deck, they have these guys with swords sticking out of them and, you know, knights and everything. And that just kind of got to me. And I was like, I just don't think I can handle this. And then I stumbled on to the regular deck, read a couple of books about the regular deck, and then just started my own process. And that was about 38, 39 years ago, I guess. And it was like, for me, the regular deck is like reading music or reading a language. Yes, it has the kings and the queens and everything, but it's not quite as visually and culturally loaded for me. And some people are wizards with the Tarot deck, but for me, I really like the regular deck because it's almost like a computer printout to me. You know, I've been doing it so many years. I look at all those cards and I understand them and I know how they interact with each other, and it's sort of, they kind of even talk to me a little bit. So it sounds bizarre, I know, but, so I just stuck with the regular deck all these years, and I've learned over the years that I do a little body scanning like a lot of psychics do. You know, I can feel things. I don't predict death. That's between the person and God. But I do a little stuff for people for their health to check out how they're doing, and usually tell them to go to a doctor if it's if I think there's a problem. Interpret jewelry and clothing. Where people wear their jewelry as well, because I've been a palmist for 40 years. And it just kind of all came together. I'm the psychic golfer, you know. I kind of pull out the club I need to hit the shot with and get the job done. So I go with whatever works. If I use a pendulum, for dowsing, I use everything. So, I'm kind of a garbage man, as they say in basketball, you know. I can throw up any kind of shot you want, just about.
I look at the straight deck of cards, and I just see numbers and symbols. And to me, you're talking about the cards talking to you. Absolutely. When I teach a class of tarot people, I'll tell them to listen to what the cards have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Not only what the guides have to say, but what the cards are telling them. And to look at all those symbols. Yeah, the tarot cards are a lot more confusing to people with all the symbols and numbers and colors and all that on it. But a straight deck, I find myself saying, okay, this is the Two of Hearts. That means it's equivalent to the Two of Cups. It would take me forever to do a card reading for anybody.
You know, in the history, as I'm sure you know, the history of the regular deck, is that guys, you know, there was a tarot deck was around first, several hundred years ago, and then people extracted the regular deck from the tarot deck in order to gamble, reportedly. So guys would sit around, I guess, and they do have all the numbers, and they'd just gamble with it. So it's had kind of a questionable history, I suppose, at the beginning. But the playing cards really do, they just do great. I just really enjoy them.
It amazes me. I appreciate so much that you can do that. Your palmistry fascinates me. I know enough to get myself in trouble with palmistry, kind of like I know enough about numerology and astrology to get myself in trouble.
Yeah, well, but I think anybody who's really pretty psychic can use any of these things to tune in, like a tuning knob, you know, on the stereo or the radio or something.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot, there are differences in the way people read palms. You can do what's called scrying, which is like using a crystal ball. And some people use the palm. I've known some really quite well-known and famous and good psychics who are palmists who did more, like they look at the palm, they know some of the major lines, but they just look at the hand and they would start seeing things, just like somebody would in a crystal ball. And that's one type of palmistry. The type that I got into is called or was considered what's called scientific or rational palmistry, where it's more of a study of all of the lines and all of the mounts. And, I've even over the years learned to interpret cuts and wounds and moles and scars and fingernails and, all kinds of things. So everything to me is symbolic. Everything, no matter where you look, it's always there. There's always a symbol. So I don't think it matters if you do tarot, if you do palms, if you do astrology, if you do numerology. If you're tuned in, it's all cheese, and it's just a different way to slice the cheese. And I think you can get the same. I've done that with people where I go to, I've been at a psychic fair once, and one of my clients, a client came up to me and said, well, look at my palm and tell me about my love life or something. And I told her, and she said, well, how did you get that? And I said, well, I read your heart line here, and I read it in this direction. She said, well, the lady over there across the room told me exactly the same thing, but she read the heart line the other way, backwards to the direction that I read it in. So, if you're in tune and your goal is to be the best channel of God's blessings for the person you can, it just works. Somehow it just works.
Almost in a psychometry kind of way, where in psychometry you hold on to something, an object, a hand, or an object.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Pick up the vibrations, quote-unquote. Yeah.
Absolutely. I do that. Like the fingernails tell you a lot about a person's health, and any people in medical settings know. There are a number of things that are actually medical indicators, like clubbing of the fingernails when, you've seen some people with pulmonary diseases or lung cancer, and their nails will droop like a little claws, right over the ends of their fingertips. Other people have ridges, which are called Bose lines, very deep ridges, vertical ridges, sometimes horizontal ridges. The Bose lines are actually are horizontal, but there are other ridges too that are vertical, and you get a lot of those things, and a lot of those are in fact, medical indicators, and medical people can tell you about that. But what I do is when I'm tuning into somebody's health and wellness, you know, I find myself holding onto their thumbnail, you know, holding their thumb, you know, and just holding between my fingers. And that helps me kind of tune in. It's almost like what's also called, I'm sure you're familiar with radionics, you know, little gizmos or machines where you rub something together and you get readouts, or you get things in your mind about, you know, what the answer is. And so, yeah, I think touching, you know, however it works, I think is great. If you're helping people and you're trying to be helpful and not, you know, hurt them, control them, use them, rip them off, then whatever works is great.
The one of the things that I have found over the years is that if somebody does abuse the ability, they don't stay in the field very long. If fellow professionals don't somehow get rid of them, nobody will show up at their door. And I think that's I think that's important for people to know. They don't last long if they're not real. They just don't.
Yeah, I think that's well, you know, that goes back to the thing about you know, I think it's sort of a use it well or lose it kind of thing. I know, like, I'm not able to use my gift for gambling at all. I mean, I even get in the wrong line at the bank or the post office or the wrong line of traffic on the expressway. You know, I'm not able to use my gift to get ahead of people or to gamble. And I've uncovered a past life where I used my gift to gamble. You know, I mean, I was trying to make the things fall, you know, on the table the way I wanted them to, and basically bet everything and lost everything. So whether I'm holding myself back from that or whether there's a, you know, a law that got broken that I'm still paying off, I'm not sure. But you know, I'm able to use my gift, and like I say, professional gamblers, and I've read for some who seem to be really lucky, you know, or people that win, like, you know, the lottery twice or something. There are some people that are just able to use their gifts, you know, for gambling or for money making like that, or maybe picking stocks even. And I think it depends on whether people have the right attitude for it. You know, if they're not making the money a god, or if they're not ripping somebody off. People can do it, but of course, the more we gamble, I think the more we're going to wind up evening out in the long run. So I've had I've had you know, newspapers call me and say, "Can you give us some lottery numbers?" And I go, "Sorry, I can't do that. You know, can't." And I've got a story here. You know, this guy came to me. I don't know. This was about 10 years ago. This guy came to me right before Christmas, and at the end of the reading, he got up and said, "Oh, hey, I'm going to Las Vegas tomorrow. What do I bet on?" And I said, "Hey, I can't help you with that. You know, I'm not allowed to do that." And he said, "No, I don't care." And a friend out in the lobby said, "Well, what should he bet, red or black?" And I said, "Well, okay, bet red." You know, so I didn't hear from him. And you know, about a month later, I heard from the friend that he bet red and he won. You know, and I thought, well, gee, that's pretty amazing. That's great. So the next year, here comes the guy again, right before Christmas. You know, back to see me again, and he says, "Okay, I'm going to go to Vegas." I said, "Stop right there. I can't help you. I'm not going to do this." And he said, no, I want you to do it. I'm going to pay you anyway." And I said, "Well, okay, you know, all right, we'll try it." And so he gave me 20 football games, and he wanted me to help him, you know, pick the winners of 20 football games. And so I did, and then I didn't hear from him. And a few months later, the mutual friend came to see me, and she said, "Oh, remember that guy that wanted to bet on all those football games?" And I said, "Yeah, what happened?" And she said, "Well, you got all 20 wrong."
Oh, no.
So that's like, you know, that's about the same probability of probably getting all 20 right, I expect.
Bless his heart. He just.
Yeah, well, you know, so that's a lesson for him and a lesson for me, I think.
Mm.
So anyway, that's how I feel about it. So, I'm sorry?
Just tell people how they can reach you.
Okay, well, you can reach me. My website is Joe Nichols, J-O-E-N-I-C-O-L-S, no H, J-O-N-I-C-O-L-S, joenichols.com, and they can link to my email, or my phone number in Austin, Texas is 512-323-5183, 512-323-5183.
Now's a good time to give our phone numbers out again. Remember, you can call in and ask questions. The U.S. number is 1-877-270-8714. Our Canada number is 1-888-284-3264. We would love to have questions of Joe or of me, but This is Joe's Night. The name of the book is How to Make a Good Living as a Professional Psychic by Joe Nichols. It's just chock full of practical, right down to a list of what to take if you're going to set up for a psychic fair or any other kind of performance that you may have to do. Notes about being marketing and flyers and how to put postcards together. Do you still do postcards?
Yeah, I do actually. I send out a postcard mail out. I started doing that about 20 years ago, and it's great. It keeps people, keeps people informed. It reminds them of you, and it's good marketing. Yeah, so it's a private mailing list, though. You have your private mailing list, which you if you're doing psychic work or healing. I wanted to say, you know, my book is the title is Professional Psychic, but actually it's also got some good tips for people that are healers, you know, that have a healing practice. And because some of the fundamentals are the same, you know, with a psychic or a healing practice. But, yeah, the advertising works good. One of the things I tell people, you kind of have to, unless you're selling a book or something, kind of have to be careful for all of the, you know, the people that want to sell you ads for all these manuals or all these, phone books or all that kind of stuff. You know, sometimes they don't turn out so well. And like you've said, word of mouth is just huge, you know, or if you have a private mailing list and you can keep expanding on that, that's really the way to go.
I've stopped sending out postcards because of the cost of postcards, but I collect email addresses. And I
That's what I do as well. Yeah, I have an email list and a postcard. My postcards go out when I do workshops. You know, a couple of times a year I do a series of workshops, and so my clients, and especially in Texas, I'll send out postcards too.
What is your schedule? What's coming up? I know we have a show in August here, a psychic fair in August. Are you traveling around Texas or out of Texas anymore?
Well, I'm going to be in Midland. Let me see if I have my schedule on me. I don't think I have it on me. I'll be in Midland, I think, at a psychic fair, Midland, Texas, in September. I think it's something like the 18th or 19th, whatever the Saturday and Sunday is. And I'm doing workshops here in Austin, psychic ability, how to develop your psychic ability and use it practically. And we'll be teaching palmistry classes. Also, I do one manifesting, too. You know, I wanted to say about The Secret, you know, people, that's kind of the rage right now. But, you know, a lot of us have been teaching some of these same principles for years, you know, for decades.
Thank you.
And it's great that it's caught everybody's attention and everything. One of the things that I teach, though, when we talk about The Secret and how to manifest, because one of my classes is how to manifest financial and career success, which I practice and, you know, it's kind of worked for me. Everything I do that I give out or I teach, I've used myself successfully or I wouldn't use it. A lot of these principles, I think, need to be tempered with a spiritual focus, like for my highest good, you know, because you can, if you really want something, you can manifest it, but you might be unhappy with the result. You know, you'd be careful what you ask for, in other words. So if people just want money, they can get money. If they want to try to, you know, get a certain type of person in their love life, they can create a person like that, but they might be surprised by what else comes along with it. So it's always good to, you know, manifest things for your or others' highest good. So I don't know. I get that little sermon got in there, so anyway.
No, that's true. There's that higher good thing again, whether it's for your client, a friend, or whoever sits in front of you, or for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, in your book, you also tell people about how to take care of themselves. And as far as I'm concerned, if you don't take care of yourself and you don't grow yourself, it's going to be very difficult to help others do the same.
Yeah, and I think we teach best that which we need to learn ourselves, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know what I'm working on all week long by what I hear myself telling my clients. And because, you know, I jokingly tell my clients sometimes they're paying me to do therapy on me. Because we're always working on a piece of ourselves in the mirror, you know, and everybody does that. You know, when you're at work, you have a problem with some, you know, boss or a coworker or something, you know, there's probably a part of ourselves that those people remind us of, you know, that we don't like or that we saw when we were kids or we had around us that we still have a problem with. So, you know, we're always working on a piece of ourselves in the mirror, And I think that, you know, if we realize that, it keeps us a little bit humble. So we're not like Icarus flying too near the sun and crashing and our wings melt and we crash and burn. You know, it's, humility is, you know, if you're doing psychic work, boy, I did have an opportunity many, many years ago to do a reading for Edgar Casey's son, Hugh Lynn Casey, in Virginia Beach. And he told me, kind of just between the two of us, he said, yeah, if you really want to, you know, have your karma hit you right in the face, just espouse a public spiritual career. You know, and everything, all your stuff will just hit you right in the face. And I think that's true if you're doing psychic and spiritual work as well, you know. And to me, it's real important at this point, you know, and it's hard for everybody, I think, but, you know, I really try to walk the talk if I can. And, you know, sometimes I don't succeed, I think, but, I think everybody who tries to do that, it's the intent that's important, not whether we always succeed. It's the intent of, you know, getting back up, dusting off, and getting back on the horse again if we fail, you know, in some expectation we have of ourselves. You know, whether it's, you know, being totally forgiving or totally loving or totally supportive of other people. And, you know, you mentioned about taking care of ourselves. You know, we have to honor our own inner child. And that even is true when we're doing spiritual work. Because like when people first start, and you may remember this a long time ago, when people first start doing spiritual work, like you start doing practice readings, and you mentioned, I think, at the very beginning of the show about, you know, doing relatives or friends or, you know, your buddies, you know, you kind of practice with your tarot deck on them. Well, you watch, if the listeners are doing that stuff, you watch when they're pretty good and the people that they're reading for free for realize that, those folks are going to sit there for 2 hours and keep pumping you for more stuff. And you find yourself being exhausted. At some point, you have to be able to, you know, honor and love and set boundaries for your own inner child. So you have to, you know, take care of yourself. You have to, whether it's watch what you eat, exercise, get support for yourself, healings, massage, get your hair done, or take day off. You know, it's really important.
How do you, because you're so good at what you do, and I know you teach a lot here, and I know you mentor formally and informally, how do you keep people from making a guru out of you, whether it's clients or whether it's people that you're training? How do you keep, where do you draw that line? How do you draw that line? Because, you know,
I've never even thought of myself like that, frankly. I mean, I'm not being falsely humble here. I think like a lot of people, I realize that I'm just like everybody else. I mean, some of us have more talents. Like I said, somebody can throw a football 70 yards on Sunday. Somebody else can paint a beautiful picture. But we all have our human challenges. And, maybe I've been around the earth long enough and I've screwed up enough times in my past lives that I finally realize, hey, it's not really about, you know, winning or beating or being the best or being the greatest or whatever. You know, it's really about doing the best you can and trying to help people. A digression here, if I may. Edgar Casey, the great American psychic, I mentioned him a minute ago, he said that somehow we exit the earth plane through the star Arcturus. Now, I don't know if that's a portal or if it's even accurate, but he said we exit through Arcturus. I've had people and clients in my office say, well, Joe, is this my last lifetime? And I always think that's the kind of question that's like, if you have to ask how much it costs, you can't afford it. Because what I was given one many, many years ago by my guides was the image of the person getting ready to walk through the portal at Arcturus, and he's waving goodbye to everybody here on Earth. And this voice on Earth says to the person, well, you know, you can leave if you want to, but we've got these people here on Earth that, you know, are really having trouble, and you'd be perfect. You'd be the perfect person to be able to help them. What do you say? And the trick is it a trick question? You know, if you say no, I'm not going to go back and help them, do you actually get to leave?
Ooh,
you know, or is it that we should say, oh, sure, okay, I've got patience. It's like somebody talked about, you know, I remember, I think I read this somewhere, that somebody asked Buddha, the Gautama Buddha, how long it would take, how much patience it took to achieve enlightenment. And Buddha said, well, you see that mountain over there? Okay, yeah. Well, you see that dove sitting on the tree over there? Yeah. Well, you see this silk scarf? Yeah. As I understand, I hope I'm not butchering this, but there's something about, Buddha said something like, imagine the dove taking this silk scarf in his mouth and flying over the top of the mountain and eroding the mountain down. That's how much patience we have to have. And and in order to achieve enlightenment. And I feel like, you know, we're all in it together. You know, we've all got issues. We've all got stuff. Every client I've ever seen, I see this beautiful light in the center of their chest that I call God's light in the heart chakra. And I mean, everybody I've ever seen has one. I don't care if it, and I've read for, as you have, I'm sure, people, you know, in prison or have been in prison. I read for somebody one time that I think might have even torched his own building or something. I mean, I've, you know, all kinds of people. And everybody always has that beautiful light in there. And and I'm told it's guaranteed to manifest fully in this or some other life or dimension or whenever, you know. So I think we're all just kind of swimming along trying to help each other. So I don't know if I've answered your question. Did I get close?
You did. If you work with guides, I know that. You've made reference to yoga. What is the number one thing that you do for yourself that feeds you and keeps you going in your work?
I try to balance it. I've had prostate cancer, I've had surgeries, I try to keep myself going, and I'm okay right now, you know, knock on wood, but that was several years ago, but I try to watch my diet. I exercise pretty regularly, I'm not a jock. I've never been a jock, but I get kind of desperate now in my old age, so I try to run 3 times a week. I do yoga about 3 times a week. I try to meditate when I can, and I have a great support system. My wife is extremely supportive, that's really important to have people that, you know, that you can lean on, you know, partners or spouses or whoever that you can, you know, that can help you and be there for you.
People that you trust.
Meditating too. I mean, meditating I mentioned, but you know, doing spiritual practices too.
Spiritual practices, and I know a lot of practicing psychics that are very, very religious. They're genuinely in their churches. They tithe. They participate. They volunteer. They do everything in the world they can, even though their preachers or ministers may not approve, quote unquote, of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They take that belief system, and it's what feeds them, which I think is
great. Well, I think that's great. Good for them, you know. Good for them if that's really supports them.
Well, one of the cutest things that I think people, and cute may not be the right word, but it always gives me a chuckle, is when somebody leans across the table, any age, male or female, leans across the table and says very quietly, "Do you believe in God?"
Oh, yeah, right.
And bless their hearts, they're just so afraid that they're delving with the negative side of life when they come to a psychic. And I had a therapist tell me years ago that we are, practicing psychics are the most underpaid therapists in any industry.
For not being licensed, you know, we probably are doing a lot of stuff that, unofficially is probably like counseling. And that's why it's so important, and you mentioned this earlier about, you know, not scaring people, because I think people who really believe in what we do, can put a lot of stock in it, and if we're not careful, we have to be careful and always loving and look at it from their perspective as we say things, because people do get scared or they get freaked out, and I've even learned that I can't joke around. I've actually I believe I have quite a sense of humor. But I've learned over the last 20 years, I can't really joke around with my clients because they take it seriously, and they think, well, what does he mean? What is he saying? You know, so I've got to be serious as much as I can. As far as the belief thing, you know, the religion thing, the problem is, I mean, this has been going on for a long, long time, whether it's the flat earth or the French persecuting the Cathars or it goes back in history, people not agreeing, not believing, persecuting other people for their beliefs. It's rampant in the world right now as we speak. And beliefs are beliefs. Beliefs aren't necessarily rational. I think it's important, and I'm so grateful to be alive in a country that I think we still have our Bill of Rights and we have the, you know, freedom of religion, which is just incredibly wonderful to me. But, you know, I honor anybody's right to their belief, and if it works for them, wonderful. But it's unfortunate that some religions have a feeling that they need to proselytize or they need to make everyone else believe or agree with them in order to be validated. And I think, as it says in the Bible, there are many mansions in God's house, and I think there are many ways to the oneness. And I honor and I'm grateful for the country we live in, and I honor anybody for their belief system. And one of the forefathers said, I may not agree with what you say, but we'll fight to the death your right to express it, which I think is wonderful too. But, you know, beliefs are beliefs. And some people believe that, we are in cahoots with the devil. Some people believe we have access to higher inspiration. Other people believe that that God is telling them to go blow people up with a bomb. Beliefs are beliefs. They're not rational. And so I honor anybody for their beliefs, but you have to sort of go with what you feel is right in your own heart. And sometimes that's not always popular.
No, it isn't, unfortunately. It isn't at all. What would be the first thing that you would encourage someone to do if they want to become a professional, if they want to make an effort to have this lifestyle? And it is a lifestyle, folks, trust me, as their living, as how they make their living.
Okay.
Practicality, but on a personal basis.
Right. Well, I'm a bottom line kind of a guy. You've got to have some sort of, I don't think you should just quit your day job on a whim and then just start doing psychic readings. My philosophy is more conservative. Like I did it out of my house nights and weekends for about 3 years while I was still doing a day job. And, and then when it looked like I was getting close to making almost what I was making in my day job, I had a little bit of savings, and my wife at the time said, well, maybe this is what we need to do now. And I said, well, yeah, I don't think I can keep doing this day job thing anymore. So we had some savings in place, and it actually took me, this was 20 years ago, it took me about 6 months to really build up my practice. And that does happen, as you create the slots in your schedule. The universe, if you're sincere and your intent is clear, then the universe will start filling in the clients for you. But it may take a few months. And then I always tell people, make sure you get the email list or the mailing list. Always ask people permission, but always get an email list and always honor that and never give it out to anybody. Never, ever give it out to anybody. Always, never violate confidentiality. That is a cardinal rule. And then go from working on relatives, friends, to working on friends of friends or friends of relatives, people that you don't know. And then you can start out, gauge what the market will bear as far as the locals and what people are charging, how much an hour and all that stuff, and kind of start in the middle and then just see what happens.
I forgot what I was going to ask you. Give out your phone number again, how they can reach you on your website.
Yep, my website is Joe Nichols, JoeNichols, no H, joenichols.com. And my phone number, my office in Austin, is 512-323-5183. That's 512-323-5183.
Do you still do phone readings?
Yes, I do, actually, yeah. What I like to do, though, if I haven't seen somebody, since I've been a palmist all these years, I always like people to, send me a JPEG copy, like a scan, a copy of their palms, and then they send them to me on the email, and then I have them to look at while I'm talking to them over the phone. And yeah, I do have clients around the country and some overseas, and so it's interesting. It's interesting.
Are you going to be teaching via email or on some of this wonderful gadgetry that we're able to communicate with on the Internet, conference calling? Are you going to be doing any of that kind of teaching?
Well, at some point maybe I'll figure out how to do that, but I'm probably more low-tech than you are. So I'm kind of an old-school guy, and I still...
Over the United States, including Hong Kong and India. The name of his book is How to Make a Good Living as a Professional Psychic, Nichols. Joe is the first name, and you can find him at joenichols.com. This has been Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland. My website is Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, Ireland, psychic.com. We do have archives available for this and all shows on bbs.com, bbsradio.com. And we appreciate your listening. Please come back again next week. Next week we will have with us Julie Chambers. She's a numerologist. Her website is www.dragontea.net. You can check her out there. Thank you so much for having been with us. This is Elaine Ireland, going global for spirit. We are out. Thank you, and we'll see you next week. Be kind.